I must tell you, I've never had a problem with white people ever in my life. But full disclosure, the poor whites are my least favorites. We've gotten a lot of trouble out of them. And I'd never seen so many of them up close. I looked them right in their coal-smeared faces. And to my surprise, you know what I didn't see? I didn't see one deplorable face in that group. I saw some angry faces and some determined faces, but they felt like decent folk. No, they did. In fact, I'm not even lying, and I didn't sound fucked up, but I felt sorry for them. I know the game now. I know that rich white people call poor white people trash. And the only reason I know that is because I made so much money last year, the rich whites told me they say it at a cocktail party. And I'm not with that. And I listen to them. I listen to them say naive, poor white people things. Man, Donald Trump's gonna go to Washington and he's gonna fight for us. I'm standing there thinking in my mind, you dumb motherfucker. You are poor. He's fighting for me.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128-bit war, you play Nintendo. On some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't been turned.
Welcome to This Is America, June 20th, 2018. On today's show, we were lucky enough to catch up with somebody with the Portland General Defense Committee, or GDC, who was on the scene of the growing occupation at the Portland ICE facility. On Sunday, as people in McAllen, Texas, were in the thousands converging on the immigrant detention center there, where families are being separated, another group of people was mobilizing for a vigil in Portland, Oregon. As the evening wore on, people opted to camp outside of the building, and occupation quickly evolved to include people camping around the various entrances and exits of the building. The occupation also stopped the ability of ICE agents to leave the facility. At one point, one person came out of the building to plead for those still inside by saying, ironically, they just want to go home to their families. The occupation then continued on into Tuesday, which is when we were able to interview the Portland GDC member. Right before our interview took place, a swarm of DHS agents armed with semi-automatic weapons and riot gear converged on the space in order to help evacuate the remaining ICE agents, many of which who covered their faces as they left, and many officers had to leave their cars behind in the parking lot. Later that night, supporters reported that upwards of 1,000 people participated in the nightly vigil at 8:30 p.m., Later that night, however, anti-fascist groups began to report on Twitter that Proud Boys were making their way towards the encampment and confirmed visual sightings. Due to the strong showing, however, anti-fascists later tweeted out that Proud Boys had packed up and called it a night without incident. Currently, the Portland occupation is growing, as cities across the U.S. are also making plans to take action, hold demonstrations, and continue the fight forward. Some other anti-ICE actions that have taken place since Sunday include a mass rally in San Francisco, which blocks streets and intersections surrounding the ICE facility, a mass rally in Boston outside of an ICE facility, a rally outside of a detention facility in Richmond, California, a rally held in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois against ICE, a march in New York on People's Monday, which took place against attacks on immigrants. In New Orleans, a mass demonstration was organized against Jeff Sessions, who appeared at a sheriff's convention. An anti-ICE march took place in El Paso, Texas. And in Philadelphia, demonstrators clashed with police as mass protests took place against Mike Pence, who was speaking in front of a group of Republican governors. Not to be outdone, outside of a Trump hotel fundraiser, people blasted leaked audio of children in immigrant detention facilities crying after they were separated from the parents. Also, in another glorious action that took place in Washington, D.C., members of the local chapters of DSA and the IWW surrounded and chanted shame and end family separation at Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen as she ironically ate at a popular Mexican restaurant close to the White House. In recent days, Nielsen has become one of the key figures within the Trump administration to defend the practice of child separation. After about 10 minutes of chanting, she left the restaurant. We should also keep in mind that despite the growing amount of resistance on the streets, mass raids are still happening. Just a few days ago, over 100 people were rounded up in an Ohio meatpacking facility. Meanwhile, Trump and his supporters on the far right and the mainstream media have only doubled down on mainstreaming white nationalist talking points while continuing to pump up fears of migrants to their base. As Vanity Fair wrote about Stephen Miller, who went to college with Richard Spencer and organized events with far-right speakers along with him, and who is the architect behind the family separation policies at the border, quote, "Stephen actually enjoys seeing those pictures at the border," an outside White House advisor said. "He's a twisted guy. The way he was raised and picked on, there's always been a way he's gone about this. He's Waffen SS." The window opened by the Portland occupation is encouraging more and more people to take action in a real and tangible way. And it's once again putting social movements ahead of anything that the Democrats are doing or saying. We need to continue this trajectory, expand and grow these occupations, as well as build our confidence to continue the fight and create autonomy. Also, if you're not in Portland and you want to help, you can see our show notes for how to donate to the folks occupying outside of the ICE facility. Yesterday was Juneteenth, a celebration of the day in which slaves in Texas finally learned of the Emancipation Proclamation and marked the end of one form of racialized slavery. Soon after, the 13th Amendment was passed, which legalized slavery of prisoners, and soon, many former slaves found themselves in similar circumstances after having been arrested by the state. In this context, the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, or RAM, called for Capture the Flag actions on Juneteenth. See our show notes for a roundup of awesome pictures and videos of what all went down yesterday. And now, before our interview, let's turn to resistance and repression news. DeAndre of the Black Pride 4 got their felony charges dropped in exchange for community service and probation and will not serve prison time. On late Monday, it was announced that the Berkeley 5 were found not guilty on all the charges brought against them. Moreover, it was revealed that the violent fascist and racist Daniel Killian had worked with the Berkeley police to push for charges against the five arrested anti-fascists. Released audio shows crying Nazi Chris Cantwell calling the Charlottesville Police Department to tell them they should murder, quote, communist protesters by putting them through a wood chipper. The police staff employee on duty replied, "That's awesome," and then thanked them for their kind words. We're going to play a clip of the call just so you can be able to hear all that was said.
Hey there, I imagine you guys are getting a bunch of calls about a bunch of communists who want you to release people. But I got to tell you, jail's too good for these people. They ought to be put through a wood chipper, and I'm glad you guys are cleaning up the streets.
Well, that's awesome.
All right.
Thanks for your support. Yeah, they just arrested, I don't know how, I just came on shift, so I just catching, I haven't seen the news, but noticed that we already have things on lockdown here in our lobby, but evidently, there was like 25 people. I think they arrested.
Yeah, you got a communist problem in that city, and then they have to feel law and order, or things are going to get worse.
Well, actually, there were due for another doozy here in August. We're preparing for again, so I don't see it getting any better. I'm hoping this time it's not going to be as it was.
Well, but I tell you, this is the issue, right? The issue, you got to keep them communists in line. You know, that thing that happened last August would have been fine. It's the Reds you got out there.
Right.
Resistance and construction of anti-pipeline encampment infrastructure continues in so-called British Columbia. Check out the Camp Cloud page for more info and see photos in our show notes. A heavily armed right-wing man was arrested, now faces felony charges after he used his truck to block the Hoover Dam in order to demand the release of Hillary Clinton's emails. As CNN wrote, however, quote, "The 568-page report was released this week, leaving the man's message very unclear. It was recently revealed that Virginia GOP Senate candidate Corey Stewart got 2017 campaign help in the form of money and security from neo-Confederate and white supremacist group League of the South. The League of the South is part of the Nationalist Front, which clashed with anti-racist protesters in Charlottesville in 2017 and also included the groups the Traditionalist Workers Party, the National Socialist Movement, and Vanguard America. Stewart was endorsed by Trump and is also close to neo-Nazi darling Paul Neelan. Former political prisoner and part of the Move 9, Debbie Africa, completed an amazing press conference the other day. See photos from Philly Anarchist Black Cross in our show notes. That's going to do it for us today. Until next time, please sign up to donate monthly or give us a one-time donation to help us meet our monthly fundraising goals. Also, we are in the process of sending out shirts and stickers for orders over the past couple of months. So if you've ordered some IGD swag recently and you haven't got it, please sit tight. It is on its way. And now for our interview. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody that is on the ground in Portland. This is being recorded on the evening of the 19th. So do you just want to introduce yourself real quick and who you're with?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Kat. I'm with the General Defense Committee of the IWW here in Portland. I am currently, I'm currently down here at the PDX ICE occupation.
Well, let's just go back to the very beginning. What happened? What caused this to kind of kick off like it did?
There was a vigil that was held here on Sunday that was really, really widely attended and really powerful. We've had kind of a series of actions here at ICE over the past year or two. It really just kicked off that night at the vigil. People just decided then and there that they were going to stay at the encampment.
And that was on Sunday night, or that was on Monday night?
I'm trying to remember what day it is today. It was on Sunday night.
Oh, wow.
I still have not slept.
So people have been out there since Sunday night. So this was the same day that all the actions took place in Texas. People were holding a vigil on Sunday as well in Portland. Can you just describe the feeling in the air of people that were there on Sunday? What kind of like... switched it from, you know, we're going to have a vigil outside this building to like, no, we're going to occupy this area around it.
Yeah. I actually wasn't on the ground on Sunday, but I think that really there's kind of been a momentum building here in Portland, especially with the news of the way that ICE treats children in detention. Uh-huh. And it's kind of reached a boiling point for a lot of different people here, not just like radicals, but even liberals and conservatives have like come out and shown support and given us food. So it's just at like, I feel like it was at that critical mass when we had the vigil. And there are some folks here who are really inspired by Occupy and were more than Occupy, they're inspired by the indigenous struggles at Standing Rock. Mm. And they wanted to recreate that here in order to protect our people of color in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the first night on the ground? Did ICE agents come out and say, you know, what are you doing? Because, I mean, we've seen, if you're watching the hashtag Occupy ICE PDX, I mean, you've seen that up until just a few minutes ago that the ICE agents basically did not leave the building. They were inside the building. So assuming that they've basically slept inside their workplace the past few nights.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sunday night was pretty small. We didn't have a lot of people staying over here. Uh-huh. Monday night, we maybe had a group of like 50 in the evening at the vigil. We're doing a vigil every evening at 8:30. And then people kind of left and we had 12 people here to hold over the camp. And we used a really small amount of people in order to block the main entrance here at ICE and keep cars from exiting. We were actually able to keep one. We actually have a game going right now we were able to keep one ICE agent from leaving the facility in his car, and his car is still in the facility, and it's probably been 48 hours now.
Damn.
So we're trying to see how long we can keep it going. Hopefully this guy will never get his car back.
Have they come out at all or tried to engage with the people outside?
ICE hasn't, no. So the way it's been working pretty much is that ICE keeps their face covered either with hoodies or with their shirts or with bandanas or medical masks. They've also been covering the faces of detainees that they're bringing in. And they try to remove all contact with the protesters. We've had more contact with DHS, actually, who at one point, when we had some of the ICE agents stuck pretty late at night the other night, mm-hmm. come out and ask, these people just want to go home to their families. Can't you just let them leave?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. These people were throwing children into cages. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, just the disgusting irony of that request of please let these people go home to their families. You know? Yeah. So,
I mean, the few glimpses that we have gotten from them where they're showing any sort of reaction or haven't had their faces covered, they're happy. They think it's hilarious that people are out here talking about how they kidnap children and how they tear apart families. It's a game to them, and you know they get paid for it.
Why do you think they're covering their faces or going to that extreme?
I think that they're worried about being doxxed. I think that they know that the community hates ICE agents. Just, I mean, everybody. There's so few people out there who actually support ICE and what it's doing.
Right.
They're really terrified of facing their community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, especially on Monday night, something that we were able to do a lot was get a lot of video of their faces and their license plates in order to actually start to get some awareness of who these people are. Like, is it someone who lives in your neighborhood? Do they live next door to you? Yeah.
I mean, there's a video of some of these people coming out, look like mostly men, but look like saw one real beefy guy with what many would describe as a fashy haircut. Looked like some tattoos. One was an American flag. I mean, they look kind of like people that show up to Joey Gibson's rallies. I mean, if I had to stereotype anybody.
Absolutely.
Well, do you just want to talk about what happened today? The DHS showed up and basically gave them a safe space to leave the area. What happened?
Mm-hmm. DHS had actually showed up a little earlier than that. We had one ICE agent who tried to leave. This morning we had blocked off the front entrance completely, so they couldn't get any cars in or out.
Mm-hmm.
So they pulled around back and have been using this kind of secret side entrance to get in and out. And we actually managed to block the back area so that they couldn't get in and out of that either. So when they got out of work today, they were trying to drive over this curb to get away from us, and they got their car stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to call DHS to come and give them support because they were surrounded by people telling them they were a kidnapper and Gestapo. And mm-hmm. So DHS actually came down with a few agents and forced some folks to clear out of the way. We're really, really aggressive and violent. They had their pepper spray in their hands pretty much by the time that they reached us and were already shaking it. We hadn't said a word to them and forced their way past our barricades and let some cars through.
Mm.
And then recently we had some rumor of DHS and I think also the Federal Protective Services having some vehicles amassing pretty close by to our encampment. And they kind of rolled up to the side door, that secret side entrance, and allowed folks to jump into their cars and vans and kind of ferry them away. It's pretty tense before that, but it's kind of calmed down a bit since then.
Well, I think a lot of people are asking themselves, what happens next? The ICE agents are out of the building. Do people foresee that the police will try to get you all to leave or that they will keep doing their jobs from another building, or what happens next?
I mean, that's a great question. Their cars are still here in the parking lot. Their belongings are still in their cars. They have to come back at some point. We're planning to be here as long as possible to keep them out. With the Portland police, it's kind of a question of how involved they're even going to be, because there's a lot of questions of whether or not it's federal property or private property, and whose jurisdiction that falls under. And that's why we've mostly been dealing with DHS. And Portland police has kind of taken a step back, but there is always a chance that they will evict. We asked them, or somebody asked them recently, if they were planning to evict today. And they said they weren't, because there weren't enough people here yet, which seems like a very strange way to do that, but yeah.
Huh. So, I mean, for everybody that's watching this, I mean, there's been a lot that's happened today. There was massive demonstrations in San Francisco in front of the ICE building there. In D.C., members of DSA and IWW kicked out some mucky muck that's involved in DHS, I believe, from a dinner, and they're connected to what's going on with ICE right now. So, I mean, there's a lot of action happening. Mm. There's still actions that are happening in Texas. In Philly, I think there were clashes with the police today that turned violent over ICE protests. I mean, for those that are kind of looking to Portland as kind of setting the tone or as a model, what would you say to them right now that are listening?
I mean, I think the first thing that I would say is to let Latinx people and indigenous people lead the way, and to put your bodies out there. If you're a white person, to put your body on the line for them. This is a way that you can do it, that you can protect our communities and that you can protect our families. I would also say that the thing that's really come out the most of this is just how powerful community is and how much people care for each other. We've had so much food delivered to us here since we started that we've had to start boxing it up and giving it away to homeless shelters. It's been amazing. And just to remember that even though this is a struggle, that we can celebrate within the struggle, and that sometimes celebration itself is a form of struggle. And one of the things that's kept us going is this sense of euphoria and excitement and celebration as our community grows.
Awesome. Anything else you want to touch on that we haven't talked about, or any advice you'd give to other people that are maybe thinking of replicating what's been going on in Portland?
I would say that I can't give any advice on how to, you know, start or replicate a grassroots movement necessarily, but to understand that people have already come before us and have tread a lot of this path, and that we can learn from people within our community who have been through this before. Like, Occupy was not that long ago. We have people in our communities now who organized that, and we need to talk to them about the lessons they learned. And people who even further back have been involved in struggle in their communities. I think that's really the best way. We're not replicating, we're adding on, we're building on top of. And I think that's the best way for other people to approach it too. If you're building on top of this movement.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And, if our listeners can, be sure to follow Portland General Defense Committee. There's also another account that's Occupy ICE PDX. You can follow that hashtag, and there's also another account that's associated with that that's tweeting out live updates and videos, and you can get a pretty good idea of what's happening on the ground almost by a hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute basis. But thank you so much for coming on, and best of luck to you, and stay safe.
All right, thank you so much. Solidarity.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us, and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.